Okay. We will call the subcommittee of the Ways and Means Public Subcommittee to order for Tuesday, May 25th. We are continuing our public hearing on Senate Bill 5506, and we will postpone our formal welcome and introduction of our new distinguished member until we have a fuller audience. But welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Adel and I have worked on several different issues together and had a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
This process has to be fun.
It isn't working.
And it needs to be fun. We need to put a little more fun into it. So we are going to jump right into inmate work programs and finish up. We spent a great deal of time on this subject yesterday, Adel and Senator Gourley. And if the if Ben has 45 seconds worth of summary, we can move off of this subject.
Mr. Chair, I'll do my best.
If you have 30 seconds worth of summary, you can move off of this subject.
Okay.
Profound words. I appreciate them. Okay. Seriously, you have anything you want to say on inmate work? We belabored the subject, I felt, yesterday and did about as much as we could do.
Mr. Chair, because of your advice yesterday, I'll make sure and get on the record. My name is Benjamin DeHaan. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Corrections. I've got stickies all over here that says don't touch the microphone and make sure to introduce yourself, so I've done that. Mr. Chair, Senator Gourley, as we discussed yesterday, the inmate work program is a very large and complicated operation, and we spend a great deal of time on the inmate, on the work crew portion of it. That does lead private partnerships and industries. All of that is in your book as far as the percentage of compliance. It talks about the number of inmates employed in the various industries programs. And there's an update on where we are since we talked to you last. The thing that I think needs to be on the record is the question of the legislative and constitutional change that we have envisioned in order to propel these programs forward. Representative Manick mentioned it yesterday, but with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to just go over it very, very briefly. And there are two bills that affect what we're going to be doing in the next biennium. One of them is HJR 82, which is a joint resolution. Again, Representative Manick has been very involved in that. In a nutshell, very, very quickly, what it does is it eliminates the Prison Industries Board, which is the constitutional body that regulates inmate work programs now. It's comprised of the Secretary of State, the Governor, and the Treasurer. And according to HJR 82, it will be eliminated. It clarifies the question of competition with the private sector, gives us a little more guidance there. It offers a little more guidance with regard to delegation of governor's powers and subsequently the power of the DOC director to delegate. And it also reinforces the fact that inmate work programs are to be used for the public good, as well as some technical issues related to industry's work accounts. So the House joint resolution will enable us to operate, I think, in a more efficient way. The other bill, 2488, which is also winding its way through the process, will actually create a quasi-private corporation which would alter the operation of IWP in a very big way. It would exempt them from a lot of the requirements for contracting, oversight by DAS, and allow them to do some things in the personnel area to expand their workforce and contract. So those two things I think are very, very important, and I think will help move us forward. So those are the pieces of legislation. I think we can change subjects unless you want to hear specifically about industries.
Nope. appreciate the recap. Any questions of the committee, Rahan, on inmate work? On we go.
Okay, I'm going to need Sue up here. I'm moving ahead here. You're going to go first.
Yeah, very important.
I notice we have two very distinguished expert witnesses that have traveled a great distance to be here. Perhaps we could call them to the witness stand. Perhaps Mr. Dehan could stay there to help them with their table.
And show them how to introduce themselves.
Yes.
Oh, I've practiced that quite a bit.
We have Mr. Dehan who needs some practice. This is Mr. Dehan.
How you doing?
Hi.
What's your name?
DJ.
DJ. Hi, DJ. David, pleased to meet you.
Yeah.
Okay, we have these two distinguished witnesses that have traveled a great distance to be here. We are talking about the corrections budget. This is the Oregon State Prison System. And we've called you here today to ask for your expert opinions on penal policy, prison policy in the state of Oregon. So for the record, could you identify yourself, please? Talk into the microphone, but don't touch it. Yeah, get close. You guys shoot in.
You can't touch it. You get mad about that.
Okay.
Not that close.
I'm Jonathan, and I'm from Bend, Oregon. I'm David Lynch, and I'm from Prineville, Oregon.
Okay, now this committee has been waiting a great deal of time for these expert witnesses to be here. We must have the information that you possess to help us make our decisions. Mr. Lynch, this is not a laughing matter, sir. These individuals here run the Oregon State Prison System. They have the key that opens the cell doors to every cell in this state. They know how to use that key. Are you kind of seeing where I'm going with this? I wish I had that key sometime. Okay, now that you've come here to share knowledge, what do you think about Oregon's prison system? How many prisons do they have, Mr. Westland? How many prisoners are in the Oregon State Penal System?
10,000.
Oh. How many prisoners are they going to have by the year 2006?
14,000.
I don't know why we have the people sitting behind you here.
I think I can lead now.
Somebody did some homework. Good for him.
He had DJ reading some of this stuff.
So, do you have any thoughts on it, David? What do you think?
What do you think about the Oregon State Penal System? Think they do a good job or a bad job?
I wouldn't arrest the kids as much unless they have perfect proof for putting them in jail.
Let's talk about juvenile policy. Oh, excuse me, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
And, it's probably only if they're, like, really little kids, you know, like around 5, when they put them in for, like, maybe an hour or do some kind of other kind of thing.
What do you think a good age for young people to be tried as an adult?
Probably like 14, maybe enough.
You're getting pretty close.
And then they really get done by about the time.
You know, if you sit up in your chair, Mr. Westland, the committee could see you better. And they...
I guess you need to, sir.
You're doing a pretty good job, David. Let's talk about your school, just schools in general. Are you afraid when you go to school after you've heard some of the recent reports of violence?
No. Well, it depends on which school you'd be going to. If you're going to, like, one school... Well, in one where there's a whole bunch of, like, teenagers, yeah. and if they were, like, you know, dressed in, like, you know, black or earrings and that kind of stuff, yeah, I'd be afraid.
So you'd know to stay away from those guys? You know, if you keep moving like that, I get dizzy. You have to have etiquette when you're in the witness box. Mr. Dion knows all about that.
The chair.
Yeah. So 14 is a good age when students, young people, should be tried as an adult.
Because then they're in the stage of where they try to get into violence from after watching stuff like violence or like violent things on Nintendo or, and then they think like well, I don't think that some people may think this is really wacko, but I believe it's true because if they watch like too much Nintendo, you know how on most Nintendo you've got like one or two lives, you know, or something like that? Well, then they start thinking that for real if they watch it too much. And then once they grow up, they think, I can just shoot like, I'm going to shoot you. You'll have another life.
That's not wacko at all, David. That's not wacko at all.
Very persistent. I think that, though.
Does the committee have any questions for these distinguished witnesses that have come so far?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Minnis.
DJ, what grade are you in?
Fourth.
Oh, it's cool.
Remember, we both go the same one.
You do. And how long have you two been friends?
First grade.
First grade.
First, maybe second.
That's great. And you guys are the best witnesses we've had all session. So.
Well, we have one final question for you that's extremely important.
Should we increase dramatically or decrease dramatically the Department of Corrections budget?
Increase.
Mr. Lynch?
Increase.
Where's superfluous?
Okay.
Senator Hannon.
Are you young men pages today?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is there a young lady steering you around by the name of Kathleen?
No.
No.
You call her Midge.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Is Midge steering you around? That's my daughter. So she's not doing a good job, let Dad know, okay?
She's doing a great job.
Okay, Mr. Lynch, let's have the truth now.
Yes.
You're sworn to tell the truth. At that
point. It is against the law for witnesses to lie to legislators when you're in the witness box.
True, though. She has been doing a good job.
Mr. Westland, what's your opinion?
For who?
For Kathleen, the young lady that's been showing you around.
Good job.
Did she let you deliver notes on the floor?
Yes.
Did you have a good time?
Yes.
Has she given you a tour up the Gold Man yet?
Not yet. No, she's going to do this after. She's going to do it after this.
Okay. So hold her to it.
And we're also, we got a prize for finishing our scavenger hunt. And we, so that's one reason. And also, she's also giving us sort of like medals or something.
Wasn't she kind of mean to you, really, though? I mean, when you first got going.
Oh, no.
Gentlemen, we appreciate your attendance. I don't think we'll have to be using any of those prison keys.
You've comported for yourself very effectively.
One more thing. It says that he runs his criminal records to unlock the doors.
Criminal records?
Yeah, criminal codes.
Criminal codes? Or just codes?
Yeah, and then teach them, like, You know how you've got that, what's the name of that, the thing that the treasurer has to keep all the money?
A vault.
A vault. You could, like, keep it in a vault.
Keep the codes in the vault? But, you know, really, criminal records are what unlock those doors. If they're good, kind of, then they get out sooner. Mr. Westland.
Why don't you put prisoners in vaults?
Well, that would probably fall under the category of cruel and inhumane, and there are all kinds of laws against that.
Well, one reason would be because in there, you would probably die, like, the next day or so. Mm-hmm. But there isn't a lot of air in there, unless you put, like, an air kind
of thing. But then, think of, if they died, then the state wouldn't have to spend any money to feed them.
Yeah. But then we would lose our population.
You don't have to worry about air in here, because right over there is a bunch of hot air flowing.
Is this portion of our meeting being taped?
Of course.
That's wonderful. That means that you'll have an opportunity to listen to it later.
Well, we've already heard a good explanation of why we can't, you know, put prisoners in vaults.
Any more questions for us, sir?
Ooh, these guys are tough. I want to commend both of you. I think you're really our future leaders. You know, these days you're going to be setting up here. So,
I'm headed for a representative chair, maybe senator.
Sure. Or even governor. You never know.
Don't go that high.
Okay.
Why don't we use an electric chair now instead of poisoning?
Well, that's a very...
That would,
go ahead, Mr. Lynch.
Because that would, like, if they didn't do that, you know, that, if they didn't do something, like, really bad, and they, all they used was just electric chairs, anyways, that could kill them if you, like, pressed a wrong button and made the, like, too many electricity bolts that would go through. The point of the electricity chair is to kill the prisoner if you did. Be sensible, bro. Yeah, but still, if you did it to people that didn't do that bad of a thing, then would you just kill them? Just because you maybe like went to, you did only like 5 speeding laws, would you kill them? No, don't need to start on death row. Then he gets killed.
Well, we appreciate your input. That subject is a very controversial subject. Oregon is a state that allows capital punishment. It's a very difficult thing to do. And it's not just the social. The people that are responsible for that, that have that burden on their shoulders, are sitting in this room right now. It's a tough thing. Tough thing, and not something to be taken cavalierly or lightly.
And DJ, Mr. Westland, would you like it if you were the husband of your wife who was going to be killed? Would you like that? And you loved her a lot? Would you like that?
Well, you can continue this debate in the hall. And we appreciate very much your input. You guys have done great. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Sure. Welcome back, Mr. Nahan.
Thank you very much, Senator. If we can proceed?
Yes, Bill, please.
Let me begin to give the budget overview for the Central Support and Operations Division, the staff that's distributing the handout. For the record, I'm Bill McGee with the Department of Administrative Services. The governor's revised budget for this unit is $34.2 $8 million general fund for 1.7% reduction from the 97-98 approved budget, and $45.5 million total funds, which has increased 8% from the legislature approved. The budget establishes project teams for prison expansion and construction. It funds startup and operations of a new warehouse and distribution center with savings in the cost of inmate care, establishes deferred maintenance management program, and delays hiring and reduces services and supplies. Our starting point here in the 97-99 led to adopted budget was $32 million general fund, $34.9 million total fund, and $203.14 emergency board actions through April 98, the salary adjustment that all agencies received, approval to acquire the central warehouse facility that will be asking for startup funds, construction planning, management, and debt service increases, and correction of the year 2000 computer date problem for the department. Current service level budget adjustments, the standard position and inflation cost increases, startup and operations funding for the Women's Prison Intake Center, which as we've seen will be eliminated in the governor's budget, startup and operations for the Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla, elimination of one-time cost open bed units in 97-99, phase out of expenditure limitations for federally funded research grants, ongoing physical plant operations at the Dana State Hospital, pending the construction of the Women's Prison Intake Center at that location or another, technical adjustments to transfer funds among budget categories with no net increase. That's several packages for this program unit, the first of the three that you've seen in all the program units we've seen so far. Package 94 postpones the operation of the Women's Intake Center and Women's Prison Intake Center Package 90 eliminates the Prison Industries Board Executive Director position and the Inmate Work Program Accounting position. It reduces the inflation allowance of service and supplies. The program duties will be performed by other staff. Result is a reduction in general fund of $279,000 and elimination of two positions. Package 94 delays opening of the Women's Prison Intake Center until the 2001-2003 biennium. Here, saving $870,000 general fund and reducing 20 positions and 4.93 FTE. Package 95 is reductions in the opening of the Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla. Again, we've seen it delays opening one bed unit by a month, delaying hiring of all new positions by a week, limiting PERS for new hires in the first 6 months of employment, and reducing remaining service and supplies by 15%. Package is adjusted in the governor's revised budget based on the current forecast. Package 161, distribution center operation. This is the startup and operations fund for new warehouse and distribution center. The $3 million general fund is financed with a transfer from the institution position, which represents savings in the cost of inmate care that we're anticipating from the operation of the warehouse and distribution center. Package 262, facility project staff and repair. This establishes three positions to staff project teams for the expansion of minimum custody facilities in Baker City, North Bend, and Tillamook. Establishes three positions to implement a maintenance management program to begin to address the department's $75.5 million deferred maintenance backlog. This package is funded with sales and certificates of participation. The other funds of $870,000, six positions, 5.76 FTE. Package 263, new construction project teams. Establishes project teams and manages pre-construction activities for new prisons planned in Lakeview, Madras, and Junction City. Again, this package is funded with other funds, $2.9 million, 18 positions, 11.52 FTE. Several items in the governor's revised budget for this unit. We're eliminating four positions in business finance section. We're eliminating all inflation, reducing base services and supplies, delaying hiring of 12 new positions and filling four vacancies, splitting a position between the business finance and human resources section, using temporary staff for construction projects, construction inspections on projects, eliminating funding for information systems backup and network services projects, reducing funding for staff training and human resources. Got a couple of technical adjustments. We're funding reclassification of information systems programs that should have been funded in the current service level, correcting errors in the estimated cost of new positions, reconciling revenue and expenditure limitation funds transferred from the Criminal Justice Commission, and transferring two positions from the institutions and administration divisions with no increase in costs. Result of the governor's revised budget and the technical adjustments reduced general fund by $1.7 million, eliminate two positions, 5.5 FTE.
What's missing from the 97-99 ledge approved budget was positions in service and supplies funding that were reduced in the revised budget and startup funding for new bed units opened in 97-99. No governor's new programs in this year.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Bill. Senator Hare.
Bill, on the current service level, it says ongoing physical plant operations and damage in the construction of the women's prison and intake center. Is there a cost associated with maintaining that, even though it hasn't been remodeled, that you have to pay for lights and water? And yes. Is that what that is?
Sure, sir. Hey, we've got to keep the physical plant running so the facility retains its current value until a decision is made as to what to do with it.
Okay. And the second question I have is, you're replacing it back to 2001-2003 biennium. My question there is, what's going to happen in 2001-2003 that's different than what the governor is asking for today in 99?
Mr. Chair, in the current service level budget, the assumption was that this institution would open in the last 5 or 6 months of the biennium, and when construction was done, we'd be opening it then. As a cost reduction, we delayed opening the new facility until the following biennium. So we'll at this point anticipate renting beds for those 5 or 6 months, but the large startup costs to open the institution will be delayed until the 2001-2003 biennium.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. Two questions. Package 90. What happens with the functions performed by the Prison Industry Board?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordy, there is another employee in the department that is performing those functions.
All right. And then on the information systems backup, what's the impact of eliminating the funding for that piece?
The delay?
Yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Chair and Senator. In the governor's revised budget, the elimination of funding for information systems backup and network services, and my question is, what is the impact of eliminating that funding?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, it's my understanding that it will reduce the bomb-proof nature of the backup, but our folks are telling us that they will have adequate backup, that it may take a day or two to get systems online, whereas my understanding of the previous plan was it would be almost immediate. But it doesn't represent any untoward risk as far as we're concerned.
All right. Thank you.
I think staff has a clarification of the question Senator Hannon asked.
Senator Hannon, you asked a couple questions there related to the damage operations. In the governor's revised budget, there's about $1.6 million in other funds to maintain damage. And that's other funds, COPs, and that's the debt service on that's about $400,000. And by the governor's action of delaying women's prison intake center operations, overall department-wide, about $20 million reduction for the budget.
Mr.
If
I can, Larry, then we should be concerned about these proposed reductions. In other words, some may be temporary in nature now, only to find out that there's roll-up costs associated with them later. Is that a fair characterization?
Chair Westphal and Senator Hannon, that is fair. They are really not savings, if you will. They're basically cost avoidance in the 99-01 biennium.
Because I think many times it's presented as a cost savings rather than what the potential roll-up is.
Another question I have, Mr. Chairman,
is dealing with the prison industries, item 90, the policy package that Senator Grody just asked a question about. Although you have somebody else to run the work program, are they a guard? Are they management? Are they some
crisis rule regulation? Giving them some background.
Mr. Chair, Attorney Hannon, this position was essentially a staff support position to the Prison Industries Board itself, the Governor, the Treasurer, the Secretary of State, that assisted them in their functions in making decisions regarding prison industry issues. It was not a corrections officer. It was an administrative staff position that really was doing solely that. The department felt it was more appropriate to assign another person who to do those work who had some other functions assigned to them as well.
Sure, Senator Hannon, just to add a little bit more to that explanation, one of the things that we found in staffing the board is that the workload consisted of clerical support on one hand and policy formulation on another, and we felt that we would best serve the board if we were to have Michael Tafe and the people engaged in the day-to-day operation actually go before the board and prepare the various proposals. We found that by putting another person in between, it added cost and added steps, so we think this is more efficient. Assuming, of course, that it continues to exist, and that's an open question at this point.
You know, this is a I was going to say, this is follow-up to staff, follow-up to inmate work programs. I'd like to ask Mr. McGee if the governor has a position on HDR 82, and perhaps even more significantly, Hospital 2488 yet. Do you know if he's developed a...
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding the governor is supportive of HDR 82 at this point. I'm not specific 2488 as well. Yes.
Helpful enough. Great.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
One other question, and Bill, I don't know if you're the one you're in. If we adopt the revisions to this budget and population business remain constant, in the interim, as we enter into 18-month period, are you going to have to come up to the board and say we're just running the risk too thin here, and now we need to have your basic support to reestablish it?
Mr. Chair and Senator, Department of Corrections, for the record, Senator Hannon, yes, that's exactly what will happen here. We're budgeting directly to the April 1999 prison population forecast. If that does change and go up, yes, we will return unless we can, for some reason, internally balance. That is not likely given the nature of the budget as it currently exists. There is no flexibility.
So, I'm going to take up the reason I raised the issue is that it's not impossible in this environment here to say let's cut back and let's reduce something. The matter of fact is it puts your inmates and your guard and security personnel potentially to harm. And I think what we have to do is look at making sure staffing levels are adequate, not being pretty wise and pound foolish, and that's my concern with why I asked the question about staffing levels. If there's something we should know, I'd rather know about it than to come back 6 or 8 months from now and say, we have officers that are working 7 days a week overtime after they're told they wouldn't be working overtime. They're can't get comp time off. There's a certain production level. Once you reach that attainment,
you're not taking home additional income. You're actually working overtime
for somebody else's benefit. It's not for the employee. And there's a certain amount of time there. You have to cut it and say, above these hours, above this time, that's it. We're going to give you time off. Because it was part of the issue that was brought up in here yesterday, prison labor. What happens if the supervisor gets sick, or what happens if one of the other people in charge gets sick and nobody's there to watch the inmate? And it's just like saying to inmates, well, go back in your hole, we'll call you out again. And I just think there needs to be a thorough approach and looking at a long-term solution understanding that, how do we embrace it during this biennium?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I recall that Nick Arminicus, when he was here, the Assistant Director for Institutions, made a commitment to go back and take a very close look at staffing levels in the various institutions, and specifically to take a look at those problems that you mentioned exist in EO, in our institution in Pendleton, and we will make a commitment to take a look at that.
Mr.
Turn here.
One other question I want to ask, and that is the two correctional or Two Rivers Correctional Institution. Is that the one that's coming on this payment? So we had the roll-up cost in the current binding, and this is only to move them to staffing levels?
Mr. Chair and Hammond, the only part of the Two Rivers facility has come on so far. It's just the minimum portion of 96 beds. I suspect that you're actually referring to the Snake River facility in Ontario.
Oh, okay.
Where the, and most of those beds will be online up to the intensive management unit beds, which we don't do in the current biennium. So you will see the full roll-up cost, yes, you will, in 9901 for Snake River.
How much food does the roll-up cost have versus the cost that maybe those who would like to do something different? Is it something we are locked into, or is it something we're flexible on? Let me ask you that way.
I don't believe that we have any flexibility in doing that.
So we've got to bring them online. They're there. The bed space is there. And
the population is there that we need to service.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, the next item on our agenda is the central support and operations. You've heard from Bill the financial analysis of it. It's comprised of three big pieces: human resources, information systems and services, and business and finance. For my part of this today, I'll be talking about the human resources division, and then I'll move to ISSD, the information services division, and then Sue Acuff will take the last piece, business and finance, since that's her area. I'm actually starting on page 9 of our book. It's a human resources overview. And very quickly,
excuse me, page 9 of...
8-9.
Oh, 8-9. Okay.
Thank you.
And what you can see from the overview statement there is that our human resources operation is pretty much what you'd expect. It's what you've seen in all the other departments. It includes recruitment, human resources, payroll personnel, labor relations, classification and compensation, staff training, all of those things that you can see. And generally speaking, they're, as I mentioned, they're fairly run-of-the-mill kinds of operations. The one thing that I think that you should pay attention to here is that our organizational structure and the creation of this division really took place in 1996. And that was a direct response to our very rapid growth. Previously, it was a very limited part of the operation, and what we've tried to do is really emphasize the need to prepare competent employees to do what we think is a very difficult job. As Bill mentioned, the 9901 Governor's Revised continues pretty much the current service level, and it does add 5 new positions. As he mentioned, those 5 new positions are the result of a phase-in of TRCI on Nematoa. The model that we use, and it will be critical as we grow, is that for economy of scale purposes, certain functions need to occur centrally, and where we can put support out in the institutions, we'll do that. So you'll see personnel specialists who are actually outstationed, but a lot of the classification functions do occur and probably should occur centrally. Also, if you follow the book, I'm going through it very, very quickly, you'll find that the individual units, the program units, have their own accomplishments, and you can read those at your leisure. But I do want to highlight just a couple of those things that this division has achieved in the 97-99 budget. It sounds a little bureaucratic, but it's very, very important, and that's the creation of the Human Resources Manual. What we needed to do at the department is to make sure that the managers manage for accountability and they understand that, that managing people is managing our most important asset. And for them to take a less than aggressive role was not acceptable to us. And creating that manual and providing the level of training and being clear about what the expectations are have all been part of that division's charge, and I think they're doing an excellent job. In addition,
the manual then is to cover all employees' job responsibilities. And
yes, Mr. Chair.
And that's, refresh my memory, how many employees?
Ooh, to date, by the end of the biennium, we'll have pretty close to 3,800. And right now we have 3,200, guessing.
I don't think that sounds bureaucratic at all. I think that sounds like good practice.
Sure.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. Mr. DeHaan, how do you hold managers accountable for the performance measure? I kind of jumped ahead to page 13. I assumed you were going to get there. I got this for you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, the performance measurement or performance management system that we use is very important, is vitally important. And the way we do it is we start out, and this is a sort of a long-winded answer, we start out with some very clear values that are promulgated by the director out of the director's office, and we make sure that we have the equivalent of a written contract with all of our employees, the managers particularly, that identify those things that they will be accountable for, and we specify exactly how they'll hold their subordinate managers accountable. And it's all reflected in what we call our 24-month plan, which is nothing but a system of allowing us to identify what we want people to spend their energy and time on in a two-year period of time, because it roughly coincides with the way that the legislature does business. So it starts out with an overarching sort of statement about what's important. It steps down to it's a performance contract with our managers. And then I personally meet with the folks I supervise, and this is an expectation throughout our organization, that we sit down informally and give people feedback on a quarterly basis. And then yearly we sit down and give people a written performance appraisal based on their accomplishments from all of those things that I listed.
One of the things that I'm particularly interested in, Mr. Chair and members, is how we're doing recruiting women. And I note that in your 99,001 goals, you have indicated the desire to focus on recruiting women in security positions, being more aggressive about that, and people of color and the other categories, but women in particular.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, that's absolutely correct. I would be less than candid if I told you that I was satisfied with the progress that was made to date. We're continuing to push in that area, and as you know, it isn't just a matter of sending out memos. You have to incorporate that logic and thinking in the very fabric of our organization, and we have to be much more a part of the various ethnic minority communities. And we're working on that, but progress is it's continual, but it's not as rapid as we would like.
I appreciate that response. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, very quickly I'll talk about some of the other things that we've accomplished. Conduct a comprehensive national recruitment for new high-level positions. That is a very important aspect to be highlighted, because there has been more change in the last year with regard to recruitment of high-level positions than I think that the department has seen in 20 or 30 years previously. We hired five superintendents, a very large number of assistant superintendents. We recruited and hired the assistant directors for institutions, one of whom you met here testifying. So the point here is that the division has been very, very active national recruitment, and I think that we've been successful in hiring some excellent high-level people. The other accomplishment I'd like to call your attention to is the implementation of our primary level of leadership training. All of you know that because of the baby boomers aging out of our system and the unprecedented run-up in the market and return on PERS accounts, you have people leaving state government earlier than would have been anticipated. All of those things combined with our rapid growth to create a very serious shortage of people who are being prepared for leadership roles. And you more than anybody understand that we have a budget that approximates $1 billion, $800 million, and it isn't just anybody who can run a corporation like that. It requires a lot of training and preparation. And so our leadership training is really geared towards identifying those people in our organization who are ready for that sort of development, and we can start giving them the sorts of experiences that would serve them well in taking on positions of leadership.
How does Sue phrase the size of your budget, Mr. DeHaan?
Well, Mr. Chair, she usually gets
significantly under $1 billion.
Yeah, she'll take out the book and give it to you by the penny. And she'd like me to do that, but I'm incapable of doing so.
By division. She doesn't want to talk in the aggregate.
She likes specificity. She's training me.
Mr. Chair, if I could inquire.
Senator Gordon.
Are you confident that the leadership potential exists within the current workforce?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, no, I'm not. I think that our experience in hiring those positions I referred to earlier would indicate that we need to look for a mix. There are many, many capable, competent people in our organization who are ready for that or ready to learn about it. But it's also necessary for us to bring in an infusion of new ideas and to look for the best people wherever they are, maybe in other states.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, if there are no other questions about HR, Human Resources Division, in the interest of time, I'll move ahead to the second part, and that would be the ISSD.
Excuse me. I believe staff has a question.
Just one question. I think it would help them. In the notebook, it talks about the fact that you guys are replacing the discontinued relief factor management system, and a lot of the questions they've had about staffing sort of some of those questions stem from how you do relief management for staff and how they allow the folks to leave in vacations and sick leave. You're replacing it with another system, and I guess it would be helpful for them to know why you're doing that and what you hope to gain from it.
Mr. Chair, Larry, I don't know a lot of the technical details about how the system works. The RFMS system is an automated model. It's a tool that allows the institutional manager to predict and fill in vacation slots, to calculate post positions, in other words, to allocate their positions so people have access to vacation and so forth. There have been lots of concerns expressed by people who are affected by the system that it's not sensitive enough, and it may not be as modern as a system that we need considering the fact that we're growing. I do know that the institutional managers are working on alternatives, but I don't know exactly what model they're going to settle on. But suffice it to say that managing the posted position is getting more and more complicated because we have many more of them, and there's competing pressure because of training and lots of other things that you need to fill those posted positions and to keep those slots full.
So the new system is probably going to provide some relief to some of the issues that we have.
That's anticipated. That's what we hope. Any questions?
And then, his name escapes me.
Nick
Arminicus is going to be getting back to us specifically on the EOCI situation.
Mr. Chair, yes, he will.
Great.
If you would turn in your books to page H23, that's the beginning of the Information Systems and Services Division. what I'll do is just very quickly go through this. Obviously, it's a very technical area. I'm not a technical person, but I can lay out the basic details, and if there's anything in here that you want more information about, I'd be happy to get it for you. In general, our information services division includes two basic functions. It supports DOC's use of technology, not only in telecommunications, but in desktop computing and in our distributed data processing system. It also is the home, the institutional home, if you will, of our research and evaluation unit. Within ISSD, if you look on page 24, what you'll see is it's organized into four basic chunks. You've got operations and user support, and that's the part of the organization that supports and manages what we call the AS400. It's a IBM mainframe system that a lot of the information systems run on. The staffing for user support is also included in that division, and user support is the technical support for PCs or desktop computing. The next section deals with applications and maintenance. And the application...
Dan, let me interrupt you just for a second. I see all over this thing that, and I compliment you for this. You're the first agency department that hasn't come in here screaming Y2K, and I see all over this thing that you're asserting that you're compliant. But I see that for your main system, the information system, corrections information system, but I don't see it for the trust canteen system, the staff development system, or your sentencing calculation system. Are you in good shape there as well?
Mr. Chair, yes, we are. All of our systems have gone, we have, I don't know if you're familiar with the DAS color coding of how they characterize the various projects, but they're basically red, yellow, and green. Green means you're in good shape. Yellow means you're gaining on it. And red means you're in deep trouble and probably won't make it. We have no red systems. All of our systems are green with the exception of one yellow, which will soon turn to green. That's a trust and canteen system. It was not Y2K compliant, needs to be replaced. We had a hang-up with the contract with the Department of Justice, which slowed us down. That's why it was yellow. And we intend to replace the entire system by September. Well in time for the millennium. Our sentence calculator is actually taken off the list for the main reason is that we can run them. It is a mission critical system. We think that it will be Y2K compliant, but if we fail to do so, we can calculate sentences manually. In fact, we've been calculating sentences beyond the year 2000 for many, many years now. So I guess the short answer is that we're in very good shape, Y2K. We've done it ahead of schedule in many respects, with the exception of our contract problem with Trust and Canteen. And we're also spending about half as much money on that as we had anticipated. It's somewhere in the order of $4.75 million, and the early consultants report estimated that it would be twice that. So if there is any, well, there's plenty of good news in our approach to IS, but some of the best news is that we're in good shape, we believe, for Y2K.
So do I hear you recommending that we take every consultant's recommendation and cut it in half?
Mr. Chair, if you feel like it, I wouldn't venture to comment on that one.
Well, I have two words for you on your information systems and Y2K compliance. Bless you.
Thank you.
That's all we've heard. Great job. Please proceed.
The other components of ISSD are applications and management and maintenance. Very briefly, what that is, they're the folks who write the program. When we want to change the performance recognition award system, or we need to answer a question about inmate jobs, the way we do that is we get one of those applications people to write a program to get it on our mainframe system, and then that's the way it works. So that's what that shop does. They also are tied in very, very closely to our research function, and they also, that's the point of coordination with the other public safety agencies, particularly the OGIN folks and the CGIS people over at State Police. The next part of ISSB is project management. That's very straightforward. It's exactly what it sounds like. They manage projects. And they were the early, I guess, the devotees of the SAS model of project management. There's a national model that state government is starting to follow, and we were into that very early on. It's a self-financed, internally financed operation. Anytime there's more than one division involved in a project that costs more than $50,000, then we're starting to coordinate it through the project office. The last piece of ISSD is research and evaluation. There's not as much good news in research as there is in some of the other aspects of ISSD. And the reason for that is that we do what we can. Resources are very limited. We do the basic analyzing trends, managing databases, and a certain amount of program evaluation, but that's very limited. Our focus for this shop next biennium will be on establishing automated ways of tracking the performance measures that Senator Gordley was asking about, and doing more extensive research and evaluation on program effectiveness. So we'll be able to be in a position to tell the legislature what the return on investment in programs is. Even though there isn't an increase in that budget, what we anticipate doing is forming a partnership with higher ed to leverage some of the taxpayers' resources that are already committed there. And towards that end, the Hatfield School of Government at TSU has already committed a full-time position to that. The Board of Higher Education has formed the research unit, and we have substantial agreement among the public safety agencies about the need for this, and they have informally committed to contributing funds to that. So we've made a lot of progress in the last 6 months, and it's anticipated during this biennium that some research capacity will be generated there. Anyway, that's very quickly those two pieces, and if there aren't any questions, I'll turn it over to Sue to do Christmas and Finance.
Okay. Sue, do you want to see your presentation, or are there any questions by committee members?
Sue, do you want to begin?
Thank you, sir. For the record, I'm going to start with corrections. And I'm headed on to page 838, if that will help you. Basically, the Business and Finance Division includes three different activities. One is the budget office, second is facilities services, and the third is fiscal services. Function for those, the budget office is, you know what it does, it's responsible for the management and coordination of the department's resource identification, budget development, and monitoring activities. In here, that particular staff has been very stable over time, although we've had tremendous growth in department overall, that particular staff remains as high as technical people and one manager. The facility services section, I'm on valve 841. They're responsible for including, well, actually it's the maintenance of the department's existing 13 institutions, planning and construction of facilities necessary to incarcerate the roughly 14,000 individuals referred to earlier by the year 2007, management of the department's lease facilities, and development of the regarding code compliance and other facilities issues. There's also considerable effort which is devoted to community interaction and assistance in those areas where we have newly sited to the institution. Staff there, of course, is growing to keep up with those responsibilities. In the fiscal services area, they actually comprise the backbone of the financial support for the department. That includes accounting, inmate trust, contract management, purchasing, property control, our warehouse operations, not only here in Salem, which will house the new distribution center, but also at remote locations in Eastern Oregon. That's in Pendleton, in Ontario, and in Umatilla. There are essentially three significant new elements in this section of the budget itself. And I'll hit those just briefly. Policy package number 161 does
speak to the distribution center. And that is a general fund supported effort, a little bit over $3 million, establishment of 15 new positions and reclassification of 4. We have internally financed that. Originally we had requested general fund, but now we have identified savings that will result from both spot buys and volume purchases, so we're not asking for any additional general fund. That's a huge undertaking, but we will make that happen. The second one is policy package number 262, where there's project staff requested for expansion of the South Fork Forest Camp by 60 beds and the Powder River Correctional Facility by 100 beds. In addition, there's establishment of 3 positions for what we call the repair program, and that's report and evaluate planned annual institution repairs. Back in 1996, we had a private outfit come in and take a look at existing institutions, determine their condition and what was needed for deferred maintenance issues. The costs have been updated, and we're roughly totaling $75 million in need at this point. What the program will do for us during this next biennium is actually evaluate each of those needs against consistent criteria, and we'll develop a prioritized list for you for next time. The intention here is to optimize the use of any funds which are made available for the deferred maintenance reasons. The third one is the construction management package. The original package contained 6 purchase teams for the new Lakeview site, the Junction City site, and Madras. In looking at the April 1999 population forecast for offenders, the mix changed a little bit, and timing on construction for some of those facilities has somewhat changed, and we'll get into the full description of that change. I believe it was on the schedule for tomorrow. But the teams associated with Lakeview and Junction City do not need to come online this current biennium, so you'll see a change in this particular package. The Junction City one is late enough that those positions don't need to be established, and the Lakeview is coming online just at the right timing where we can move we're currently involved in the Two Rivers Institute, move those folks down to Lakeview to continue that effort. So it's the Madras positions that we need to establish, those total 5 in number. And the total package then would be roughly $1.2 million. That's about a $1.7 million savings from what you see in the governor's revised budget. My two packages that I spoke to are financed by other funds through the sale of certificates of participation. Those are the highlights.
Any questions from the committee? Chat, want to make any comments?
I just think that those two packages that Steve just talked about are probably ones we'll follow up on when we get to capital construction, because they both CLC finance. She's gone over some adjustments to those. How about those tomorrow?
I think we're done for today, Mr. Chair, unless you have questions or other committee members have questions.
Where are our real questions? Ask us. I'm going to have to go to session if we quit now. So.
Mr. Chair, if you'd like to move on to capital improvement, I can take you through that quickly.
Let me ask the staff. It won't take very long. You guys got the time?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go.
Because, we might get interrupted with a call any second, so.
Mr. Chair, before the department begins, and I can just quickly go over the governor's budget for debt service, capital construction, and capital improvement. All three of your staff should be handing it out.
I'll hand it out, yeah. Okay.
The total for those three pieces of the budget is 80, general fund is $82.5 million. the 28.2% increase over the 97-99 pledge adopted, and $105 million total funds, which is increased by 37.2% from LAB. The budget supports the governor's long-range, the department's long-range prison construction plan with funding for new and expanded facilities throughout the state, addresses critical environmental issues at several facilities, and funds debt service on new and existing certificates of participation. The 97-99 adopted budget was $53.4 million general fund and $65.5 million total funds. Emergency board actions were the approval of the construction of the Women's Prison Intake Center at the Damage State Hospital, which increased the 95-97 capital construction expenditure limit and debt service for construction programs and staff. For current service level, we have inflationary increases in the capital improvement budget, adjustments to debt service to COP sold through the end of the 97-99 biennium, and elimination of capital construction expenditure limitations for previously approved projects. Several packages, debt service, package numbers are the same, the way the budget's constructed. The first is the Women's Prison Intake Center. That would fund debt service on COP sold for construction of the Women's Prison Intake Center at the Danner State Hospital. That's $10.8 million general fund. Also, there's debt service on COPs to be sold in the 99-2001 biennium to support construction and maintenance management staff and new capital construction and capital improvements. The governor's budget has added $6.1 million general fund. Capital improvement, we have two packages. Package 90, reserves funds from the inmate work program revenues to create or expand inmate workspace as business opportunities arise. $50,000 other funds. Basically, it gives the department some flexibility when they have an opportunity to go into a new business or expand a new business, they'll have some money to do with the space needs they have. And that is always a problem when you're dealing with 13 existing institutions that weren't built for the projects.
$500,000.
Thank you. Package 181, Capital Improvement Projects. This funds projects of several institutions to deal with DEQ mandates relating to underground storage tanks, asbestos, and vehicle wash station spill protection. Provides funds for an environmental consultant to assist with compliance issues and also funded with COP revenues, $871,000 other funds. Capital constructions, a couple of packages. 191 funds ongoing groundwater cleanup activities at the state penitentiary, COP revenues again for $850,000 other funds. Package 192 funds pre-construction, and the governor's budget originally funds pre-construction activities for new facilities in Lakeview, Madras, and Junction City, expansion of existing facilities in Baker City and Tillamook, and planning and design for expansion of existing facility in North Bend. The package also includes funds to upgrade the electrical system to two existing institutions. COP funding here for $20.2 million other funds. In addition, we have an adjustment to the Capital Construction Authority from the 95-97 budget. It's in all the capital construction. This particularly is in Senate Bill 5527. It includes that 95-97 limitation for construction of the Women's Prison and Intake Center at Damish by $22.1 million. To date, the legislature has approved expenditure limitation of $156.8 million total. Nothing in governor's revised budget, a couple of technical adjustments. We were capturing savings from refinance of COP sold for the Umatilla construction. That's already happened. And we're requesting two $1 other funds capital construction limitations for Senate Bill 1145 projects in Klamath Lake and Lincoln County. The impact here is a reduction of general fund of $780,000. What's missing here is basically the elimination of capital construction expenditure limitation for previously approved projects. And that's my last presentation.
Is your last presentation of the biennium?
No, I've got one more capital construction budget, but other than that.
Well, we're going to do a kumbaya.
Sure.
Any questions of Mr. McGee from DOS? Okay. Well, as always, your last presentation was just as thorough and comprehensive as your first. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for the spirit of the compliment, Chair.
Proceed ahead.
Mr. Chair, Sue Acuff, Department of Corrections. I could take you to page A3, please. I'll take you to the bottom of that page. I won't go over everything that's there, but I will highlight a couple of things here. this is a capital improvement asset protection area. And the general fund support for that capital improvement asset protection, basically, that's your deferred maintenance issue. We have within the budget itself general fund support totaling $1,297,826 for system-wide projects. In addition to that, there's $500,000 that will be financed through the inmate work programs for expansion of inmate workspace, if you will. And then those very specific projects that Bill spoke to, which are funded by the certificates of participation. And those are the environmental issues, the underground storage tank removal for a couple of institutions, the vehicle wash station at Eastern Oregon, asbestos removal, and the environmental consulting service. Those are the capital improvement issues. I'll take you back to debt service. Now back you up one category to I-3. This is the governor's revised budget, which is roughly $81.3 million for debt service, all on the certificates of participation. This will change. And going through the what we just talked about, the staffing change for the pre or for the construction activities, only establishing the Madras team, that will lower part of this, and also part of the pre-construction effort at Junction City can be delayed given its timing. And I suspect that your staff will have some adjustment also in the Women's Prison Intake Center dollar amount. So there will be some revision to the steps of the schedule as you see it. But these are the main elements to it. Significant dollars there, as you see in Snake River on the Centerville 1145 project and the True Rivers. That's an expensive way to do your financing for long-term construction. On the final one, on capital construction, we are taking out to page K.
Sue, just saying, are all those 20 1145 projects finished with the exception of Norcore?
No, they're not.
I think there's about 15 to 17 somewhere in that neighborhood. A little over 1,100 of the 1,400 beds. Most significant one outstanding is Multnomah in Clatsop County, Columbia County, and then these two that are just arrived from Klamath County and Lincoln County.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I think everything that's been done so far has proceeded pretty much on project and on budget. Some of the problems have been citing in the county's development and plans and for projects in the counties, but overall, those construction projects have just gone remarkably well.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Can I interrupt you?
Go right ahead.
If we could go back to the debt service page again, I-3. And looking at the narrative, the repayment periods can range from 6 to 26 years, depending on the nature of the project. As we look at the projects on the page, can you tell me what the repayment periods are for each one of those?
I can't tell you specifically. I can tell you generally where it's staffing or where it's design. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Senator. If it's new staffing or if it's design activities, those short term, then your length of time on debt payment is also shorter. For the construction activity itself, on the larger projects, it is the very long term. For minimum construction, where you have, for example, the distribution center, some of those smaller projects where they fall in the middle, they would be within that mid-range.
I was picking up on your comment that they talk about this being an expensive way to do business, and just wanted a little bit more detail.
I can get you a schedule that has that specific.
That would be very helpful.
Chair Wilson, Senator Gordley, and I'm looking at a schedule the department has in terms of the short-term answer for you. Most of the staffing issues that relate to construction projects are six-year terms. The exception of the expansion projects, for the smaller expansion projects, those are 15-year terms. And the Senate 1145 projects are generally in 18-year terms. And, of course, the larger prison construction projects are 25 to 26-year terms.
That answers the question basically. Thank you.
So, just if you didn't follow up, maybe Bill or Sue, are we going to see this 1145 interest rate escalating up from here? Or, I mean, we haven't expended all the money if these things aren't completed yet.
Mr. Chair, there will be additional debt service for the projects that that haven't been done yet, so that those will increase. I don't have the schedule we can get.
Yeah, that's just the general sentiment is always.
Yeah.
We're back, and Senator Gordon says, God willing, next biennium, this 14.6 is going to be a higher number.
That would be correct, Mr. Chair.
Chair Weston, committee members, actually for the three projects, they're budgeted approximately $1.8 million additional would be necessary based on how the governor's revised was built. Just saying.
Okay. Not here, but not what I wanted to hear, so okay. Please proceed.
Okay, one final, just a real quick discussion of the chapel construction. And it's on K5.
K5.
This is outlined for you what is in the governor's revised. Okay, they're all funded through the COPs, the sale of those. And the existing institutions there, the actual design and reconstruction is in the top portion. Design is $750,000. The Powder River, roughly $5 million. And South Fork, roughly $2 million. Pre-construction activities for all four of those sites. Now, you will see a revised Junction City dollar amount, which is $750,000 less than this year. The others will remain the same.
Mr. Chairman, sewer was spending the $459,000 in Jackson County when it's being pushed back to, I don't know, 2005, whatever it is.
Mr. Chair and Senator, those are basically property management issues and fund studies, but we do now own the site, and folks have been moved off of that site, so now we have
to... Can I inquire what the purchase price was?
I don't know that I have that here. Can I certainly get it for you?
But this $459,000 is above what was already paid on the purchase price, or this includes the purchase price?
It is in addition to. We'll have ongoing costs just to maintain that property between now and the time of the build. There's also part of those are for studies, not only the community studies, but site-specific, environmental issues, geotechnical. So those types of activities will be done for each of the sites. And I apologize, I don't have your purchase price here.
I don't know, I guess echoing Senator Hannon's question, it just seems like an awful lot of money, you know, $200,000+ a year for studies and some DEQ work, and so as you start adding it up, I'm sure it's all there. You don't have to justify it, it just seems like a large amount of money.
Well, I'd be happy to tell you what that is.
Oh.
Specifically tonight.
You just have it right there?
Environmental assessment of 50,000, 50,000, wetland mitigation 150,000, geotechnical study of 30, property boundary surveys of 50, property management cost of 50.
Time out. It costs $50,000 to survey the boundaries of the property?
That's what I have here, sir. Okay.
Well, I just got this list from LFO, and the only thing I understood, Sue, is talk about property management costs. Well, property management costs are $50,000, not $459,000. The rest of this is engineering services, traffic impact study, environmental assessment, wildlife habitat assessment, wildlife wetland mitigation, geotechnical study, community impact study, prison advisory committee, transportation demand management plan, DAS, geographic information, other mapping, cultural resource study, governor's regional community solutions, property boundary survey, miscellaneous advertisement and printing, services and supplies, and then you get into property management costs. And then it has an inflation factor of 3% first year, inflation factor of 3% the second year, contingency funding at 10%. You know, let's throw an extra 10% in there and bump the kitty up. I don't know.
Is that a motion, Senator?
No, I haven't given the motion, but I think I want to strongly consider that we look at what we're tying up our resources. We don't have a big fat kitty to work with, and we should target in on how we're going to use our resources. Not that those things aren't valid, but if you put off building the prison
with three or four bioneers,
technology is going to change. I mean, if you're doing all the studies now, there's going to be technologies and ways to determine wetlands and mitigation and all that stuff in the next 5 years that we don't even know exists today.
Well, before you get me too wound up, I've just been informed there's a call of the House and that I'm going to have to stay on the House, or on the House floor. So if you could look into this a little bit, I mean, it's blowing me away, $50,000 to survey that property. I mean, if you and I went out and bought the exact same property, I guarantee you we would be absolutely satisfied with, pick a high number. I mean, it doesn't cost that much to survey that property unless there's all kinds of, yes, shortcomings. So we will adjourn the meeting today and take up tomorrow. We appreciate you hanging out and getting that far. Thanks.
We adjourn. Okay.